Welcome, 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 geeks and nerds, girls and boys, to another brand new episode of Geek to Me Radio. Tonight, we have writer Alex Charon on talking about his new book, The Mighty 690. Later on, we'll have Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo talking about the new Hulu series, Shogun. And then, Joey V and I will give our review of the new Dev Patel film, Monkey Man. All that and more, stand by.
We're talking TV, comics and movies, and video games. Star Trek from Star Wars, we'll try to explain. There are 12 doctors, 4 Hogwarts houses, 1 ring rules and more. To be the greatest Pokemon master, you must catch them all. You must catch them all. Try to catch them all. Gotta catch.
If you are driving around the greater St. Louis area tonight listening to us on the big 550 KTRS, hello to all of you. Thank you for tuning in. If you're streaming us, we've got video up again this week because Joey V's back in studio. So if you're watching us on YouTube and Facebook, hello to all of you. Thank you very much for tuning in there. As always, if you're listening to us after the fact in the podcast form on whatever platform you listen to, we do appreciate you finding us there and keeping up with us each and every week. Hopefully by now you've subscribed, left us a nice 5-star review. That always helps us out in search engine optimization. Maybe you've liked one of our previous shows. We just had for Easter, we just had Adrian Barbeau on. If you missed that interview, go back to the website, check it out. Those interviews are all up online at geektomeradio.com for your perusement and enjoyment. Tonight, a brand new show. We've got video again. I'm very excited. We're talking with lawyer and writer Alex Charon about his new book, The Mighty 690. They pitched this to me and they said, it's about the 80s. And I said, I'm in. No questions asked. So let's go ahead and bring in Alex right now. Thank you for your time tonight on a Sunday.
You got it. I appreciate being here. Thank you.
Of course. So the book, as I was looking into it, it's a great story about a real life contest that this radio station, the Mighty 690, put on in the summer of 1981, but it's a fictionalized event. So the characters are fictionalized, the location of the prize, everything's fictionalized, but it's based on true events, as they say. Talk a little bit about what made you decide to write about this particular, I mean, there's all sorts of radio contests. What was it about this one that really had such a visceral memory in your mind?
So you got to remember, this is the early 1980s, and we're sort of coming off the 70s, where there were a lot of gimmicks on TV shows and radio shows. But you know, I think the times were getting a little cooler. Listeners were getting a little bit hipper, and you know, this kind of thing was sort of passe. And so this was really sort of a last attempt at one of these radio stations to really play to the base of their listenership, you know, get as many listeners hooked and interested in this contest as they could. And I've never heard of a contest like this since. So it was really the last gasp of sort of this, these sort of gimmicky contests that took place throughout the 70s and into the early 80s. But, you know, it was such an integral part of Southern California at that time. Southern California was very much in change. People were leaving the cities and the suburbs were kind of flourishing. And so it was, again, sort of a nice kind of closing chapter in that era.
It, you know, I think a radio contest, but when I was growing up, we had like the Friday morning joke off on Y98 FM, where you call in best joke, they vote on, and then you end up getting a prize from that. Or they've got they have one now that, you know, the big radio conglomerates like Clear Channel will have one, and come to find out you're competing against people all over the country. This was not like that, though. This was just this local station giving away $10,000.
Absolutely. And remember, this is in an age before the internet, before cell phones. You really couldn't do a contest like this today, right? The clues would be figured out in 30 seconds and everyone would circulate the answers, and the money would have been found that day. So you're absolutely right. And also, you know, in this age of, you know, stream on demand and, you know, having all of our media services, you know, sort of saturated with content. You know, this is a time where, you know, there weren't that many radio stations to listen to in Southern California. There weren't that many TV shows or stations to watch. And so it was also sort of a nice closing chapter in this era where we could all find this commonality around kind of one or two things.
With the four people we mentioned being fictionalized characters, and you have them as a schoolboy navigating identity, an elderly Holocaust survivor, a single mother on the brink of exposure, and a daredevil racer teetering on the edge. Since they're fictionalized, what was it? Because that's very specific characters. What was it that drew you to making those four characters the center of this book?
I appreciate the question. So these are all based on people that I knew growing up, and the daredevil motorcycle racer, there's a place here in Southern California that's still operating today, the Costa Mesa Speedway, that, you know, operates races on Saturday nights for, you know, $15. You can get in. Back then it was a lot cheaper, and, you know, watch guys race around an oval on a dirt track and crash into the walls. And, you know, it was sort of that the last gasp of that sort of daredevil culture that we knew in the 70s and the 80s with, you know, Evel Knievel and Wide World of Sports and things like that. You know, so that was based on somebody that I used to watch as a kid. You know, everybody else is based on somebody that was part of my growing up in the late 70s, early 80s, but really kind of a love letter to that time and place.
With the prize too, you know, in the book, they're digging for actual $10,000 inside Dodger Stadium. From what I understand, the real prize was nowhere near as glamorous nor hidden in such a cool place as well. What was the impetus behind the location and everything using Dodger Stadium?
Well, there's this disconnect between how you and I remember the 80s, right, and kind of the way when we were growing up, how cool things were and larger than life they were, and the reality. And there seems to be, you know, a wider and a wider gap as you get older. In the actual contest, the money wasn't even money, right? It was a note that was found behind a license plate on a car parked at the Redondo Beach Pier. And to me, that was a little disappointing, right? I mean, here's this larger than life contest. You know, we're going to try to find this money buried in the desert or in the dirt somewhere. And for it to be just a piece of paper saying, hey, call the station, was a little deflating. And so when I wrote this book, I really wanted to sort of embellish the way that I had remembered it and sort of do justice to the way you and I and people of our generation remember the 80s.
It seems like, and I'm interested to get your thoughts on this, it seems like there's a lot of love for the 80s more so now than ever before. I mean, Stranger Things, that series is a love letter to the 80s. Ready Player One just recently came out, but we've got, you know, sequels to movies like Top Gun, Blade Runner that are coming out, and they're doing gangbusters at the box office. Would you just say that's because people who grew up in the 80s now have a little more disposable income, and those people are also making some of these? What do you attribute this huge resurgence of 80s culture to?
Well, that's a little bit of it for sure. You know, but I mean, not to get too far in the weeds and philosophical, but, you know, the 80s were really, when you look at pop culture, and I hit on this a little bit earlier and I tried to capture this in my book, The Mighty 690, it was really the last time where, you know, media culture and movies and music and film was pretty centralized. You know, you had fringes in music, right? And you had fringes in film and books. But, you know, everything was, we had sort of this commonality around these things. Everybody would talk about the TV show on last night, whether you were a kid from the suburbs or a kid from the inner city. And we've sort of lost that since the 80s, right? As things have become more decentralized. Mm. Especially in our pop culture. And so I think there's a resurgence of those because we long for that, right? With all these choices and all this, you know, saturation in pop culture, I think we long for that. And the 80s really were that sort of perfect storm.
The book, too, I mean, like I said, obviously I'm a radio guy. We're here on the Big 550 KTRS, which is another thing that interests me very much about this book. But it's interesting, too, like we talked about, the radio contest have changed everything. Again, much like the movies, it's all now these conglomerates own, you know, a huge swath of radio stations. And then we've got podcasts coming in and competing with radio. Do you see a way forward as a landscape? Like, what do you think with, you know, you've obviously done a lot of research, you know about all these topics. What do you think the landscape is going to look like for radio in another 10 to 15 years? Or might it go backwards? And some people like, hey, I like tuning on the radio, just kind of like the same thing where VHS tapes seem to be making a resurgence.
That is such a good question. There, you know, I'm biased, and I'm obviously biased toward radio. It was a big part of my growing up, and I remember, you know, growing up here in Southern California, and I'm sure St. Louis and the rest of the country were the same way. As a kid, you know, if you fell asleep or you went to sleep a little later, you know, and the airwaves were a little thinner, you could pick up, you know, radio stations from other towns, and it was really something magical, and you felt like you were part of this, you know, larger grid of connection with other people and other places. And it was intimate too, right? I mean, yeah. It's one person talking, one person listening, at least as far as you know, and so that intimacy, I think, no longer exists, but I think that people want that. So I'm pretty bullish on the future of radio. At least I hope I'm right. I think people want that intimate connection. They want, sort of that, they want to be enthralled with the fact that this is happening in real time. Whereas streaming, you know, you can pause and go to the kitchen, come back and watch it an hour later. You know, I think people like that immediacy and that intimacy. So I'm rooting for radio.
It's interesting too, just because the proliferation of all these things, and we talked about how the contest, you're competing against everyone across the nation, like on a Clear Channel or a large corporation like that. And my executive producer, Joey V, just posed a question to people in the chat, so I'm going to ask you as well, Alex. Have you ever won a radio contest?
I have not won a radio contest, but I remember as a kid, our big local station after the Mighty 690, obviously, and this is a little bit later, but was KROQ here in Southern California. And, you know, there was a DJ named Richard Blade who was sort of the face of the 1980s. And, you know, he would have contests and I would call and I would call and I would call and I would never get through. And one time I got through and got to request a song. So that wasn't technically winning a contest, but in my mind, that was about as good as it got.
Yeah, that's one of the things, too, I often wonder. I'm like, did they not even see the phone ringing? And I did not know until I got into radio. No, you don't. If you have to watch for the little blinking light on the phone. Little did I know. I'm like, why aren't they hearing the phone ringing? Come on, guys, answer the phone.
Exactly. No, radio, you know, still has, still holds a place on the mantle of sort of interest for, people looking for that connection. And, again, I think it's the most sort of unadulterated, pure form of entertainment left. And so I wanted to capture that in this book, and hopefully I did. And again, I'm hopeful that other people feel the same way and that we'll be listening to radio for years to come.
And again, the book, The Mighty 690, you can catch that and anywhere books are sold. We always, always, always recommend, please, if you can, go to your local bookstore and support your local bookstore. If they don't have it, they can probably order it. So just ask, do you have this book by Alex Sharon? If they say no, say, could you order it? They'll probably say yes and be able to get it in. Do you have, I want to make sure we plug websites and everything, because you've got a really nice website. Can you get the book through the website?
You can get the book through the website. It's at alexandercharon.com. Like my name, but when I was in trouble with my mom. So not Alex, but Alexander, alexandercharon.com. Or if you have to on Amazon, but I'm completely with you. If you go to your independent bookstore, they can order it for you if they don't already have it.
And the people in the chats are saying that they have done the same thing. My flock requested a song one time. Our friend Chance in Atlanta won tickets to Corey Hart. Wow, on Z93 FM in Atlanta. That would have been a concert I would have loved to have seen.
Yeah, no, these contests are still around in some, you know, in some forms. I just don't think they're as elaborate as they used to be. I think they're pretty straightforward and vanilla. I long for those days in the 70s and 80s where we had, you know, these contests like, you know, keep your hand on a car and whoever, you know, takes it off last will win the car. You know, of course, you know, the old throwing frozen turkeys out of the helicopter thing and all that. So I long for those days.
Yeah, the Palm Mall Shopping Center has just been bombarded with live turkeys. Film at 11. If you're a WKRP fan, you'll know what we're talking about. Great, fantastic. I mean, probably one of the best TV shows encapsulating how radio really works. That was a brilliant show.
Absolutely. No, there's a lot of good stuff in the 80s, and I refer to a lot of that in this book. I tried to put in as many 80s pop culture references as I could without the potential of getting sued. So my law background came in handy in writing this book.
And that's another thing too, because you weigh in on things, but from time to time on Fox Business and CNN. I mentioned in the beginning, lawyer and writer. Are they equal parts of your time, the writing and the law, or is it one take up a little bit more of your time?
That's a great question. So, I've got to pay the bills, and so my law practice and my professional life is still a majority of what I do. This is really fun. This book took me 4 years to write. I started writing it during COVID, or at the beginning of the pandemic, and finished late last year and was published in February of 2024. So the book is successful, and all early indications are that it is. And I'm very appreciative for that. Then maybe it'll take up a little bit more time.
And I'm curious, because I read in one of the interviews you gave with somebody, I can't remember which interview I read, that you said it'd almost be impossible to track down winners of this contest when you were trying to write the book. Since the book is out, has anyone contacted you and said, oh my gosh, I participated in that, or I tried to find the car in Redondo Beach?
My emails, my texts, my social media has been blown up with people saying, I remember that contest. Thank you for writing about it, because it was something magical for me too. And I remember, listening to it, or I thought that the money was here and my older sister thought it was here. And it's been fantastic. The response has been really good.
Were there reports around the Southern California area at the time of people just randomly digging up areas of road or anything like that because some people get so into these contests, they really take them seriously. Were there anything like that?
Well, you have to remember, that was a large amount of money at the time. So yeah. this was a big deal. And, there weren't, any news reports, but, there was certainly there was gossip, and, everybody knew somebody who knew somebody who knew where the money was. And if, they knew where it was, and, we're going to jump over a fence, dig a hole, do whatever they needed to do to find it. So there was a lot of social networking and gossip, and it just added to the fun.
As an 80s kid, my big brush with victory in a contest was I was able to find the captain on the back of the Captain Crunch boxes, and you had to get three different boxes of Captain Crunch, the detective kits and the little red thing to look through and find the clues. And actually I got a check from, why was it, is it Post who makes Captain Crunch, Post cereal, sent me a check for $100. That was the most exciting thing to little 7-year-old me that ever happened.
That's pretty good. That's certainly better than I did. I looked for that and I couldn't find the captain anywhere.
Yeah, he was very hard to find. You'd think he would stand out in that blue outfit that he always wears, but, who knows?
That's
so let me ask you, before we let you go, favorite memory of the 80s, whether it be a movie that you went and saw, a toy that you had, or a cartoon on Saturday mornings, do you have a favorite memory?
Such a great question. I have lots of really good memories, which inspired the writing of this book. But, I do remember riding my bike with my brother, through town to go to the movie theater. And I forget what summer that E.T. came out, but we must have seen E.T. 68 times in the movie theater. And I remember at that time thinking what an impact films could have on culture, like E.T. did. And that was really emblematic of some of those big blockbuster movies that came out in the 80s. But, one thing that I took away from that, as we kind of tie a bow on this, is back then I think there were maybe 12 new movies that came out a year,
right?
And now there's
right.
hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. So I really miss those days. So my best memories were immersing myself in the pop culture of the time, but remembering how special it was because it kind of brought people together.
Yeah, well, that's I think as far as bows go, I think you tied that one very neatly on the end. So again, if you're listening, the book is The Mighty 690. It's a fascinating read. If you love 80s, like I said, it had the 80s aspect and the radio aspect, so I was hooked. But you can get this wherever your local bookstores are sold. And the website again, Alexander Charon, correct?
That's it.
And are you very active on social media if people want to reach out and contact you and share their memories?
Instagram, X, as they now call it, Facebook, anything. You can find either the book, just search The Mighty 690, or Alexander Charon.
Alex, I really appreciate your time. This has been great. Hopefully we can have you on again soon. I think we'd have an 80s night. We can just talk about 80s all night long.
I'm in. I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good rest of your night. There he goes, Alex Charon. Again, check out the book. It was a lot of fun to read. And like I said, I can see by some of the comments we've gotten in the chats here, I think those of you who were listening would really enjoy this book as well. We are going to take another quick commercial break. This one planned, unlike the last one because of the technical issues. But we're going to take another quick commercial break. We're going to come right back and chat more. Talking Shogun with showrunners Justin Martins. Rachel Kondo, you're listening to Geek to Me Radio on the Big 550 KTRS. Please stand by.
Hi, this is Dee Wallace. Welcome back, and you're listening to Geek to Me Radio.
It's almost like Alex knew I had that Dee Wallace return liner, which Joey V just sent to me, queued up because he mentioned E.T. right there at the end. So that was perfect way to set that up. Want to make sure we tell you about our premier sponsor, the Greater St. Charles Convention and Visitors Bureau. You, of course, know them by the website, discoverstcharles.com. A lot of cool things to see and do out there. The weather lately has been hit or miss, but I always see people walking up and down Main Street because there's so much stuff to see, whether you're getting some macarons from Sugar and Slice or you're just out to take the dogs for a walk, walk around the gazebo or Frontier Park. They've always been mobbed, especially once spring hits because people want to get out and enjoy that nice weather. Maybe you want to take a bike ride on the Katy Trail. Maybe you don't have a bike. You can rent one from Bike Stop Cafe, though. Grab a nice lunch and then hit the trail. All sorts of things going on, whether it's an event like a festival, like the 50th anniversary of Christmas Traditions, which is coming up this December. Hard to believe it's been 50 years since they've been putting that on. So they're going to pull out all the stops for the 50th one. Or you want to embrace Halloween, go see Legends and Lanterns, which happens the last couple of weekends in October out there. You can interact with Lizzie Borden and all sorts of fanciful characters from Halloween lore. Or you just want to get out and have a nice stroll, maybe sit on the patio, drink a glass of wine, have some barbecue at Salt and Smoke. There's never a bad time to visit St. Charles. So if you're local and you're in the greater St. Louis, St. Charles area, haven't crossed the bridge over there lately, go check it out. Check out the new restaurants, the new shops, the new small businesses, which always need your business. And if you're out of town, like our friend Chance, who's been chiming in there from Atlanta, maybe you want to plan a trip, come visit St. Charles. Lots of places to stay, lots of cool things to see and do while you're in town. I can always give you some recommendations of if you're looking for something, what to go see or where to go, hit me up. I can give you some recommendations. Start at the website, though. The website is going to be your best resource, and that, of course, is discoverstcharles.com. Saint ST, they abbreviate it. So discoverstcharles.com. Very proud to have them as our premier sponsor here, and as we always say, it's an historically good time. My next guests, we had to pre-record with them. They couldn't do the show live, but they are the showrunners and creators of the new series Shogun on Hulu that premiered on March the 28th. You can catch it now streaming. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Here is my interview with that couple. Right now we're talking with Justin Martins and Rachel Kondo, the creators of a brand new series, Shogun, now streaming on Hulu with new episodes dropping every Tuesday. Thank you both for your time today.
Thank you for having us, Chance.
Yeah, excited to be here.
This is such a cool series. I'm just, as I dug more into this, it's just, I have so many questions. We'll try to get to as many as we can in the time we've got. This is obviously based on the 1975 novel by James Clavell. I'm curious because originally this miniseries was made in 1980. 44 years later, this new series has already gotten much better reviews in Japan than the original series did, where the original series was kind of blown off as frivolous, didn't get a lot of things right. I feel with modern sensibilities, that's eliminated because this has gotten high praise. Talk a little bit about, if you could, crafting this series now, 50 years on from the book almost.
Well, first of all, I should say, we should all be so lucky that someone is still talking about our show 44 years after it was produced. Positive or negative, I think that really speaks to the impact that the original miniseries had and probably, the book that came before it. 50 years it's been almost since James Clavell first published this novel. And the fact that it's still important for audiences today to talk about these stories. When we read the book, and talk to FX about it, our pitch was really just, we want to tell this story. It's a fantastic story. And with technology and standards available to us today. It allowed us to, instead of just focusing it on the English-speaking characters, we could focus the story from the point of view of the 24 main characters that come from Japan as well, and to really do it the way James Clavell probably intended. That was always our hope.
And the casting is fascinating. You've got Hiroko Sanada from Westworld, Bullet Train, John Wick 4. You've got Cosmo Jarvis, who's Peaky Blinders and Persuasion. Were you both heavily involved in the casting process?
I will say that Justin and our casting directors set in, you know, both from LA and in Tokyo.
Yeah, we cast it, you know, down to the smallest role, trying to, you know, search really through Japan, since these were going to be performed in Japanese, we could find the best actor for the part. And what was so incredible to find was there were no bad actors. There were no, you know, we could have cast this show in a thousand different ways and it still would have been great. And that's largely because we hadn't seen these actors before. These are all new. I mean, there's faces like Hiroyuki Sanada, who obviously he's been around in Western, you know, Hollywood storytelling for 20 plus years, but there were also faces like Hiroto Kanai and Yuki Kora and Yuka Kori, who had never worked outside of Japan before. And so to bring them to audiences here was just a real honor.
One of my favorite castings from the original, we had the great John Rhys-Davies as Vasco. This one, Nestor Carbonell, who is always brilliant in everything I've seen him in, who can do drama as well as he can comedy. Was there any role particular that you found more difficult to fill than another?
No, I think that, you know, some were hard. The hardest probably to fill was the role of Mariko. To find Anna Sawai, she was truly a unicorn, someone who could emote and perform convincingly, both in Japanese as well as in English, so that it didn't feel like broken English. I mean, Japanese is her first language, and yet when she speaks English, it sounds completely fluent as well and accessible. And the fact that she can bring such emotional depth in two languages, I mean, I could probably count on less than one hand the number of actors around the world who could do that in any two languages.
Yeah, and I think that's not only the being bilingual, it's being bicultural. Mm. She really does inhabit both cultures. And as Justin said, this is something that is not easily found, because if you might be bicultural, however, I don't know if you can act in both cultures.
Yeah.
And act as...
And Rachel, I'm curious about your journey, because obviously you're born in Hawaii. You ended up going to the University of Texas at Austin for your Master's of Fine Arts program. Was the Michener Center for Writers a dream of yours to go there? What drew you to that path, and what led you down the path of wanting to write?
Oh, wow. I love this question. Thank you. I grew up on Maui, and I didn't know that you could be a writer. I didn't know that was a job. I got very lucky in that I took, you know, adult extension courses at UCLA for many years, and I happened to throw my hat in the ring for an MFA program at UT Austin, the Michener Center for Writers, and oh my God, they accepted me. So I'm still in shock.
And here you are now working on this fantastic series, Shogun. Justin, you've worked on so many great projects as well. Obviously, Top Gun Maverick was one of my favorite films of 2022, but you've done Street Fighter. We had Kristen Crook on to talk about. She loved that project, working on Legend of Chun-Li. You've done The Jungle Book for Disney. What's the hardest thing about doing a screenplay versus adapting someone else's words to film? Is that, do you find that a difficult process?
I think the conversation is always the same. You know, you have to ask yourself why when you're adapting something. Why are we doing this? Do we need to, you know, read the book? Is it, or watch the original movie? And is it, you know, if we're going to go back to it, we're not just trying to tell something as good as the original work. We're trying to tell something in its own medium that gives itself a reason for being. And I think if you can answer that question honestly, once you've found what that idea is, then, you know, you have something, you know. And I definitely, you know, was witness to that, as, you know, the process for Top Gun Maverick. And I feel the same about what the writer's room and our producers were able to generate with Shogun, that this is something that has to be told today. And it was a take and an idea and a vision of the look of the show that just you once you have it in your head, it has to be on screen. So we knew we were dealing with something really great. So between those mediums, that question is really the same.
And if I can get personal for just a moment, I'm very curious because this is a pop culture show. We always talk about origin stories. Two such talented people as yourselves, how'd you meet?
Oh gosh, how many hours do you have? We were introduced by a friend in LA almost 20 years ago, and
we were 5 years old then.
Yeah, exactly. No, you know, Rachel was I was brought to a dinner to meet some people, and little did I know it was just 25 other guys and Rachel and this mutual friend of ours, and it was kind of a big setup to try to find Rachel a boyfriend, and I went out over the bachelor competition, I guess, of 24 other people.
So it's like a real life The Bachelorette. Look at that. That's great. I just love the praise that Shogun has been getting. Like I said, even the video game auteur Hideo Kojima likened it to Game of Thrones in the 17th century. When the two of you are working on a show like this and you see such incredible feedback, Variety has said glowing things about the show. Does that impact your work going forward, or is it just like you kind of got to take the good criticism along with the bad, keep your head down, and keep doing the job?
Oh, I think the latter. I mean, what's funny is that we've been doing this project for so many years at this point, and we've invested our youth, our marriage, I mean, everything we've poured into it, and it feels so personal. I can't even tell you how many fights we've survived over punctuation and it's getting to this stage in the game is all gravy. I mean, like really rich, delightful gravy, simply because, you know, the fact that people are even, that it's available to watch, A, is shocking, but B, people are liking it. We just feel so gratified. We can't believe it.
Yeah, we have two children who are younger than this show in terms of it takes us to do it. And, you know, but when it's just like hearing someone say something about your kids, you want to be intensely protective and defensive of it. So if they're saying good things, then great. Then we're happy.
And if you're listening right now, the show is streaming on Hulu. As I said, new episodes arriving on Tuesdays. If people want to keep up with more from the two of you, are you very active on social media? Are there websites I can direct people to?
Not so much anymore, at least for me. Yeah, no, we just live out here in the jungle in Hawaii, and just us and our roosters right now.
write us a letter.
there you go. Send it by mail. Yeah, Hawaii is gorgeous. My wife and I have been to Kauai several times, went to Maui. So it's absolutely a beautiful place. You're very lucky. And again, if you're listening right now, check out Shogun on Hulu. Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo, I appreciate your time today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
If you haven't checked it out, like I said, it's gorgeously shot. I'm in the middle of my watch of Warrior on Netflix, which is really good. And I'd say this, with the cinematography on Shogun, it's that same high level of production quality. So very impressive if you get a chance to check that out. And my thanks again to Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo for their time. We're going to take another quick commercial break. Before I do, though, hello. We got some new people in the chats. Hello, BK's in there. Snarks and Sass. Gave boopies to all of us, and then also we got subbed and belled on YouTube. I just saw that little notification pop up, so thank you for that, Snark and Sass. We always like it when we get some new faces on our YouTube account who subscribe to us, and we are going to take a very quick break. We're going to come right back in just a moment, and Joey V and I are going to review Monkey Man, the new Dev Patel flick. We'll tell you what we thought about it, and if you're in the chats and you got to see it, tell us what you thought about it. You're listening to Geek to Me Radio on the Big 550 KTRS. Please stand by.
This is William Daniels, and you're listening to Geek to Me.
I'm just keeping an 80s theme with William Daniels, the voice of Kit, obviously also Mr. Feeny from Boy Meets World. But I figured with Alex on, talking about his book set in 81, then we had Shogun, the original series from the 80s, obviously redone now on Hulu by my last guests. And it's just, we're keeping an 80s theme tonight. So there's William Daniels bringing us back from commercial break. Want to make sure we tell you about our comic book sponsor, Bugs Comics and Games. If you go out there, check out the store. If you're in the greater St. Louis, St. Charles area, maybe you haven't been to a comic book store in a while. For all I know, this might be the very first time you've tuned into a radio show. This might be your first show. So first of all, welcome. Secondly, go check out Bugs Comics and Games right there on Bryant Road in O'Fallon, Missouri. Walk in the door and say, hey, is Larry here? Because if Larry's there and you have questions about comic books, he's going to answer them for you. Whether or not you're looking, hey, you know what, I used to read Spider-Man, but I'm not sure anymore where to go into it. He'll probably show you the new Spider-Man titles, which have been really good with all the brilliant John Romita Jr. artwork. The new Daredevil series is really good. The World's Finest by DC. Mark Waid's writing that one. That's another one of my personal favorites that DC's putting out right now, Superman and Batman. But whatever you're into, if you're into independent books from Image or Dynamite, we're going to have David Pepos on later this month talking about the new Space Ghost comic from Dynamite. Whatever you're into, ask Larry and he'll be able to help you find the right comic book. Or maybe you're at that point where it's like, you know what, I got so many comic books, I need to get rid of some of this stuff, I need to pay some bills. Go talk to Larry because he's going to be a really great price, and that way I will have the bonus of being able to dig through his new back issues once he puts it out in the store. It's a great place to visit. Like I said, I always love comic book stores, especially if they have back issues, and he's got boxes and boxes. He's got them regular price back issues, but then he's got them demarcated like these are all $10 each. These are all $5 each. He's got a bunch of dollar comics. So if you just want to go in and browse and spend a nice Saturday or Sunday afternoon in the store, that's a great way to spend a Saturday or Sunday, if you ask me. So go check him out. And if you're on Instagram, you can like him there. Instagram, it's Bugs Comics and A-N-D Games. He's got stuff up there. So if you're not in the greater St. Louis, St. Charles area, but you see something you might want on there, like the Faust Omnibus or maybe one of those new Barbie comics he put up there from the original Marvel run, you just say, hey, claim. He'll send you a PayPal invoice. Easy peasy, you're done, and he'll ship it right to your door securely. Bugs Comics and Games on Facebook as well. Very proud to have them as the official comic book sponsor here at Geek to Me Radio. So, this week, I get to see the previews for movies, and it's one of my favorite things because I've talked about before how much I love going to see movies in the theater. And we had one come up this past week. Was it Wednesday, Joey? We went and saw it?
Who cares? I mean, I was with you, and it was a beautiful night. I remember that.
It was very nice. It was lovely. We saw Monkey Man, mm-hmm. which is the new Dev Patel movie. Now, this is one of the things I love it when you and I talk movies, because you do a deep dive and like, oh, check out the backstory, and you were telling me stuff off air that I didn't even know about. So tell people a little bit about some of the background information that you were giving me on this movie, how it was bought by Netflix and all that stuff.
Sure. Dev Patel, everyone's favorite Slumdog Millionaire. I mean, that was 2008. That's a long time. He must have been a baby back then. He looks young as ever, except he's jacked now. I mean, this guy, he is ripped. It's crazy. We've grown up with him, basically. But Dev Patel, he wanted to see an action film starring someone that looked like him, an Indian man. And so he worked really hard on this project. And it's inspired by films like John Wick. It's all about getting revenge. And he started production in about 2019, and then COVID came down and shut the whole thing down. And so he had to find out how to make this film that he was passionate about. Went to Indonesia, where they didn't have as many COVID restrictions, but he couldn't get the same crew that he would have got if he was filming it in, you know, Hollywood or something. So he had to go to Indonesia with the crew that he was given and the camera equipment that he was given and really kind of piece this thing together. And Netflix bought it for $30 million. And then the movie that he turned in, I guess they didn't see it as commercially viable for the Indian market. Hmm. It was too brutal or something. And so it was swept under the rug, like they were just going to write it off. And then Jordan Peele of Get Out fame and Key and Peele, he saw it and he liked Monkey Man so much, he convinced Universal to buy it for $10 million. So they got a great deal on this thing. And it became theatrical. It was just going to be streaming on Netflix. So Monkey Man is now got this prestige banner around it because Jordan Peele's interested.
Right.
And it gets the theatrical release. And then we see it. I didn't even see the trailer. I didn't know anything about this. Did you go in cold or did you know something?
I've been trying, because remember we talked about when we had Janelle on last time. I said, mm-hmm. I'm trying to make that my 2024 resolution. Do not see the previews if I can help it at all. So far, I've held up on it because cutting the cord on TV, you don't get a lot of the commercials anymore. Mm-hmm. So unless I see a preview, and usually at the trailers, or I'm sorry, at the previews we go see, we don't see trailers. They don't see a bunch of trailers. We just go in and we see our movie where they're to see for the preview. So it's really been beneficial, I think.
I try and go in like that also.
I think I want to go back now because I didn't, and I should before we started doing this, to see the trailer. Because mm-hmm. I'm sure there's little things. The trailer always leaves out the odd this or that it feels like, and especially with this movie having changed hands, I take it you saw the trailer. Was there stuff in the trailer that didn't make the movie?
I watched the trailer after the fact because some of the reviews I was seeing was, oh, man, that's one of the best trailers I'd ever seen. So I watched it, and yeah, it is paced. It is paced really well. The music in it gets you stirred up, and the violence is nonstop throughout it. So I could see some people maybe being let down when they see the movie because it's not action-packed for 2 hours. But I think it was very well paced throughout the movie. It wasn't boring at all, but there is a middle ground where he's got to work back up. There's a little montage scene like you'd see in a Rocky, you know?
Right.
He gets beat down, he has to come back up. So the pacing was fine for me. I saw some people complaining about maybe a little too much shaky cam, but that didn't bother me as well.
No.
I mean, the movie starts out with him as a bare-knuckle boxer, and so those scenes are kind of up close and a little shaky. I think that style fit the film. And then later on, it turns into him fighting up a building. He's got to get from the ground floor into this fancy hotel, working just scrubbing dishes all day. And then he's got to work his way up into the VIP section. And those were shot a little differently. So I think the camera work fit what it was trying to tell in those specific times.
I agree, because the shaky cam, as they called it, I've seen shaky cam, like I think of Blair Witch Project, where it's just, oh my gosh, you're running through the woods, first person. This, I didn't feel as shaky. I thought it was just very point of view. Mm-hmm. It's very personal because he's in the ring and you're seeing the fight from his point of view. Like, you're seeing the fists come in, you're seeing him punch out. So I like that, and I thought it made it more intimate for those scenes before we kind of draw back to the bigger picture of what's going on, why he's engaged in this revenge game, what he's doing and what he's fighting for. So I didn't mind I'm using air quotes for those of you who can actually see, shaky cam. Chance in Atlanta said he walked out of Kong versus Godzilla last Tuesday, so it must not have been very good. That's a shame.
I thought that was supposed to be a rom-com myself. I thought they were going to fall in love.
Two crazy kids were going to make it.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
The X in the middle is what threw it off. I thought they were going to kiss eventually. Kong X.
Right.
I don't think you're supposed to say it. It's a silent X.
It is?
It's a sneaky, dirty X. Yeah.
And then Chris Ferguson said, Monkey Man looks interesting for sure from the trailer. Jim's Camera at Dawn is the username, says, just breathe, Chance. It's okay. I haven't seen Godzilla versus, or King Kong versus Godzilla, whatever they're calling it. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it yet either because we didn't get a preview for that one. But I do think that this particular one, like you mentioned, John Wick, I think there are shades of that, because that's one of the immediate things that's like, oh, it's a revenge movie. But I don't know what that says about me as a person. I like revenge movies. I like Mel Gibson and Payback. I love Kill Bill. I thought Gladiator, the one in 2000, Ridley Scott, was a revenge movie. And I saw shades of that, because you and I talked about that before we got up to leave the theater. I said there's parts where he's flashing back to his childhood with his mom on the roots and the grass and everything, and he's running his hands across. That was that shades of Gladiator, where he's running his hands through the wheat of his field as he's kind of going back to when his wife and children were still alive. So it's, at its heart, it is a revenge movie. I don't think the plot is overly complex, but I do like the kind of small bits of flashback we get, where it kind of shows this little aspect, and we start to piece it together as the audience, what actually happened, why he's so hell-bent on going after this chief of police in this town. At first, you don't know what the whole thing is, but you kind of are fed this along the way, and it's not like a spoon-fed thing where, oh, here's some more information you need to know. I think it happened very organically. If I had to rate this one, I'd probably give it a 9 out of 10.
Mm.
I really enjoyed it. I thought, like you said,
some
the pacing
big numbers
was good. It was well-organized drama. I liked the points of view of the camera. The music was great. I thought the music kept pace really well with what was happening in the movie at the various times, too, which I enjoyed that.
People that stick up for John Wick and say, oh, it's totally different, I think they're specifically referring to the gunplay that's in John Wick. I've heard the term gun ballet used a lot for John Wick. And I don't know, it seems like guns just aren't as popular in India, at least in this version of it. And everything is with knives. It's all close hand-to-hand combat, or knives, or parts of toilets in one scene. Just take the lid off and start bashing people with toilets. So I loved how you could feel the impact of these punches. And it's almost like a horror film, some of the kills in this. It's very gruesome, very bloody. And I liked that, especially compared to Roadhouse 2024, which we saw just before this. Roadhouse is so bad, and all it is supposed to be is hand-to-hand combat. And it was digitally altered and stitched together, and the shaky cam, and that actually looked bad. There's a scene that's similar in Roadhouse where it is switching from first person to third person, like mid-fight. It actually becomes almost like a video game view or something. And I just did not like that at all in Roadhouse. But I liked it in this version. It felt more natural. And so I do see the John Wick comparisons because simple story, you know, they killed my dog. So this one, you know, they did something to my mom and I got to get revenge. So that's where the John Wick comparison comes into it for me. But exactly, Kill Bill, there's a scene in this that reminds me of the crazy 88s in Kill Bill.
Yes.
In a nightclub that was just so beautifully set and the music was not like exactly India-based music and it was beautiful. I loved it. I would compare it to almost a Bollywood-type film as in it's so well choreographed with the fight scenes. It's almost like dancing. And the music plays a big part in the tension and the pace and how your heart rate starts beating. And there's this montage scene with a drum that really got me as well. With the music and the India feel. I think that's what sets it apart than John Wick, is that the whole setting is in India, and that's what gives it its culture and makes it much more interesting of a film than if it was set in L.A. or something.
And we want to make sure we don't go over time here. I'm trying to watch the time. But in your research that you were doing, and I only recognized Dev Patel. I didn't recognize any of the other cast members. Was that a result of we're shooting this during COVID and it's in Indonesia? But I also, as you're answering that question, I like movies where I go in and I don't know, oh, it's Matt Damon. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's Tom Cruise. Or, oh, it's, you know, Emily Blunt. I like movies where I don't, the actor does not take me out of the movie. I kind of like that. And it played really well here with Monkey Man. But was that intentional as far as the casting, or was that circumstances of filming? Do you know?
I've got a feeling, I'm not a Bollywood expert, that these are huge names in India, and Netflix was banking on that. That's why they probably spent $30 million on it. These are huge names in India, because these actors were so beautiful.
They were good, yes.
Disturbing. Even the men with their crazy square-cut jaws, I couldn't understand why I was so ugly in that theater. But then the one name that I did recognize was Sharto Copley, which, you know him from District 9. Him and Dev Patel were in Chappie together.
Okay.
So I think that's where it came in. And Dev Patel, he didn't want to direct this. He wanted to tell the story, but he wanted Neil Blomkamp from District 9 to direct it. And I'm sure once Dev Patel started spitting out these thousands of ideas, Neil said, you know what, you should direct this. This sounds like you're really passionate about this. So it's really cool that Dev Patel, he came up with the story, he co-wrote it, he stars in it, and he directs it. This is his real passion project. And it's kind of like when you saw Jordan Peele's first film, Get Out.
Yeah.
You know that he's got a huge future in Hollywood.
Right. I think kind of like John Krasinski, too, wrote and starred in Quiet Place.
Yes.
Kind of the same thing. So I think it just that passion, I think, carries over, because all those movies we've just named were really good. Get Out, I had a couple little flaws. No, not Get Out. I was thinking of the new one.
I don't think as a white guy you can say you didn't like Get Out. You got to.
Really?
Oh, okay. I don't think that's allowed.
No, Get Out. I misspoke. I like Get Out. It was Nope that I was like, because the ending was kind of ruined.
If you
see Nope, you might know what I mean. The ending
even if
kind
you
of
don't
ruined it.
Like Nope, it was so interesting. You didn't care. Like Jordan Peele's got some way out there ideas.
No, absolutely. And his Twilight Zone, Jordan Peele's Twilight Zone, had some really cool stuff that they did in that too.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, overall, like I said, Get Out was great. I was thinking of Nope when I was saying with the exception of, but no, Get Out, A Quiet Place, and now Monkey Man. I think that there's that passion from these people who are creating these and are, you know, it comes through really well with the movie.
Dev Patel's in good company with someone like Jordan Peele. So keep your eye out for this up and comer who we've known since 2008 and watched him grow up.
Yeah, it's kind of, and I wonder how that works with Netflix. I guess they took a $20 million loss on it. I don't know if they did any marketing or distribution in addition to the $30 million payout,
mm-hmm.
or if they just like, yeah, we'll recover what we can from this. But man, good business sense on Jordan Peele's part, too, to get it for $10 million.
Yeah, if Universal paid $10 million, they're doing good, because it looks like it's made at least $13 million this weekend alone. And people like us who are going to prop it up, I think it's only going to continue to grow from word of mouth.
And people like me who are going to go see it again, because honestly, that's you know this about me. The highest compliment I can pay on a movie is when I walk out of the theater and I say, I want to see it again. So there's a lot of movies it's like, that was good, but I wouldn't, you know. That's one of the ones that I'm going to go see Monkey Man again. It's that good. Very violent. So for those of you who are listening, it is very violent. John Wick and Kill Bill are spot on with like the violence levels. And it's bloody, it's gory, but it's really well paced. I give it a 9 out of 10. Do you have a scoring in mind that you would give it?
I'd give it a 7 out of 10 just because of simplicity, but
Joey hated it, so
I did not hate it. I really had fun, and sitting next to you, I think that bumps it up to an 8. If you could see a movie with James Install,
especially if
That's worth
it. Put up with me talking and like, no, don't go in there, like I do for horror movies.
We had a vocal audience. It was, you know, half critics, half public who were seeing it for free. And some of those kills, people shrieked when they saw. Like the toilet one was one that I remember getting people crazy. And then there's this one knife kill that is one of the most creative ways I've ever seen someone.
Brilliant. Yeah. Oh my gosh. So yeah, we'll try not to ruin this, but let me say, if you're a fan of this type of movie, the revenge type of genre, I highly recommend seeing this. I'm just making sure I'm not missing anything in the chats. Chris Ferguson, Chance, Jim, BK, My Flock. Thank you all for tuning in tonight. I'm going to go ahead and just kind of start wrapping up because we don't have that much time left before the music will start playing us out. So thank you to Alexander Charon for his time. Again, The Mighty 690, you can order that wherever books are sold. Ask your local bookstore to order that for you. Make sure to check out Shogun on Hulu. It started March 28th. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Thank you to Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo for being on. Thank you to Joey for helping me review Monkey Man. And next week, we have Russ Russo on along with Deb Hayes. Deb Hayes will be talking all about this is her fifth year, Big River Comic Con. It's a very exciting. She's going to have Emily Swallow there, Jake the Snake, the wrestler, again from the 80s. We're back to our 80s theme for the night. And she'll also have the voice of Scooby-Doo and Shaggy Scott Innes joining her. And then obviously we'll have more details coming about Two Rivers Comic Con, which I'm the co-head of that. So we're very excited to bring you this Comic Con here to the greater
Commissioner, I think, would be good. Commissioner Gordon of the Comic Con.
That's good. I'll let it go.
Commissioner
Two River Con signal up off the roof of Westport Plaza.
I like it.
To summon the Batman. But yeah, so there's a lot of stuff coming up. On the 21st, we have David Pepos about talking about his new Space Ghost series from Dynamite. We'll talk about The Punisher 2. Larry from Bugs Comics will be in studio talking with us as well about that. I don't want to spoil May. We got a lot of cool people coming in May, but I'm not going to give it away just yet because I'm so excited for you to hear the guests we've got coming in May as well. So I'm booking guests into June already. If you think of anyone who you'd like to hear a guest on my show, send me an email, geektomeradio@gmail.com. Just put, hey, we'd love to have this guest. If you have a contact for them, even better. Lee Majors, Chance, I would love to get Lee Majors. I'm trying my best. Trust me, buddy. That's going to do it. So thank you to all of you for listening. Thanks to Joey B for being back in the studio. Welcome back from your world spanning cruise. Mm-hmm. Thank you for putting the video, and thank you for helping me review Music Man. Thank you to all of you who listen. And
you said Music Man, I think. Get the trombones
Monkey
out.
Man, yes. With Robert Preston, we'll be reviewing Monkey Music Man next week. That's going to do it for us, though. Until next week, my friends. This is Geek to Me Radio. That's our show. Good night.